Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. It's Jason Leisure. Jason, the Bears have got another NFC North matchup coming up on Sunday. We'll talk about that and more coming up on Hallis Intrigue.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
Jason, don't look now, but the Bears are on a one-game winning streak, and they are bringing that to Soldier Field Sunday, where they will play the Vikings, who somehow might be in worse shape than the Bears are. Is that possible?
Yeah, boy, everyone's really excited about the one-game winning streak. Like, the entire conversation around the Bears seems to have changed with one win over the Commanders. And it's just such an easy leap, it seems, from winning with the first game of the season and ending a 14-game losing streak to, you know, maybe there's a playoff run in this team. We'll see. The fact is...
That leap is not coming from you and I, let the record show.
The fact is there is an opportunity right now for them.
Right.
This week against Minnesota at home, next week at home against the Raiders. That's an opportunity. Those are beatable teams. Now, just because it's an opportunity doesn't mean that the Bears will take it. So let's look just at Minnesota as an opportunity. It is a home game in which Minnesota doesn't have their best player, Justin Jefferson. Mm-hmm. So that immediately kind of lowers the anxiety for a Bears defense that has a lot of problems. And, Pat, on the other side, if you're looking for a great opportunity for Justin Fields, mm-hmm. this pass defense is atrocious. And yep. I would start with the simplest possible stat for their pass defense is that Minnesota is allowing 76% completions.
That's unreal.
That's incredible.
That would be a record.
That means that they are allowing people to throw and catch at an extremely high rate. Do with that what you will if you're Justin Fields. I think it's a great opportunity for him and for the offense and for the Bears, of course. That doesn't mean that they will take advantage of that opportunity.
No, it doesn't. I mean, you look at the Vikings, they're 30th in passer rating allowed at 110.8. 110 is pretty great. 110, essentially, they look like the Bears' defense has looked.
Yeah, so that's average. So that's like...
That's average. Not average. No, I mean, 110
is... that's their average.
Right,
that's
yeah.
Minnesota's average for the season.
Right.
So basically, you line up at quarterback against the Vikings, you're going to look like Patrick Mahomes.
They played last week.
That's pretty much what it will be. That's what they are turning opposing quarterbacks into every week.
Yeah, I will counterpunch a little bit here. They lost by 7 to the Chiefs on Sunday. They had the ball with a chance to tie the game. The Bears lost to the Chiefs 3 weeks ago by 100. They, you know, and Jefferson got hurt, I think early in the fourth quarter, so they had to finish without him. You know, there are some stats that make the Vikings look really bad, but, boy, you know, if you want to play a common opponent game, you know, they looked to be on the Chiefs' level for most of the game the other day, and the Bears certainly did not do that.
Yeah, everybody can do that for a day. I mean... although the Bears haven't.
Yeah.
I mean, I
it sounds real easy when it's somebody else's team.
Yeah. I don't think it means that those teams are that close to each other. I see the Vikings with a lot of their usual problems where they are just kind of good-ish at quarterback. They have major concerns on defense, especially in the passing game. They are missing the one guy that can change everything for them in Justin Jefferson. John Hoke, the Bears' secondary coach, was talking today about Justin Jefferson being out and saying, whoa, don't get too excited. They'll have other guys. Yeah, technically, but they don't have another Justin Jefferson. The rest of the league practically doesn't have another Justin Jefferson. And on top of that, the only team the Vikings have beaten is the Panthers.
Sure, which is the worst team in football.
The only winless team.
I'd ask you this. If you had to make a list of the five best players in the NFL who don't play quarterback, it is, I mean, on that list.
Just game-changing guys.
Whatever order you want to make it, it's Micah Parsons, Aaron Donald, Justin Jefferson, Travis Kelce.
I love your first four on that list. It's a great list.
Yeah.
Tyreek Hill,
maybe?
Is he your fifth?
I mean, either way, I mean, Justin Jefferson, you know, you say he's their star. He'd be anybody's star. He's amazing. I'll push back again, though. Kirk Cousins is good. Kirk Cousins is second in the league in passing. The Bears' passer rating that they've allowed in the five games, and I'm taking out the backup quarterback for the Chiefs because he doesn't count, okay? So here's the Bears' passer rating allowed to starting quarterbacks this year in order. 123.2, 114.5, 127.3, 133.5, and then 99.1 against Sam Howell. Sam Howell looked really good in the second half, but you know they were throwing a lot because they had to play catch up there. I think the Bears have proven worse quarterbacks have kicked the Bears' butt this year.
Yes.
And Kirk Cousins is, I think, capable of that, you know, even if it's just T.J. Hockenson and Jordan Addison and a running back. You know?
One of the main tensions for the Bears' defense that you would have identified going into the season is great secondary, in my opinion. I think that is a stacked secondary with those three corners and those two safeties. However, no pass rush.
Yeah.
And how is that going to work out? Is that lack of a pass rush going to prove to give quarterbacks too much time that the secondary just can't hold that long? Or is the secondary going to be able to negate that disadvantage, negate that shortfall that you have of not having a pass rush? Are they that good that they can do it? We actually haven't seen that play out. We don't know, really.
No,
the guys have not been out there since the opener.
Yeah, Kyler Gordon breaks his hand in the opener against the Packers. In week two, Eddie Jackson hurts his foot. In week three, Jalen Johnson hurts his hamstring. We have various injuries to Jaquan Brisker throughout the year that limited him a little bit. That's your defensive backfield right there. And we haven't seen them play together, I guess, since the first half of week one. And I think they're going to obviously be better. I think the question in general with Jalen Johnson, if you want to look at him in his career, the question is how good is he because he doesn't take the ball away? And he can be a lockdown corner, but if he doesn't get the ball, you know, that goes against the Matt Eberflus definition of good defense, which is, you know, go ahead and find the ball. Kyler Gordon, I think, is really, really important to what they do. And John Hoke talked about it. Matt Eberflus has talked about it. And, you know, part of the reason it's important to get him back, he might be their best pass rusher. Like, that sounds blasphemous.
Gordon is a good blitzer.
Yeah, Gordon and Brisker sometimes, too. Those guys coming off the edge, you know, if the Bears are going to blitz 28% of the time like they did last week, they're going to use those guys a lot.
I think if somebody asked me back in August, like, what is something you're seeing in training camp that looks new or different or interesting, it was Kyler Gordon on the blitz.
Yep.
That was not something that they did a ton last year, but he did it a lot in training camp and looked really good. He was getting in on those.
I want to pivot to something that's kind of in my mind, the opposite of what we're talking about here. The Bears DBs, I think it was their strongest group. I also think it was one that they could least afford to lose people in.
Because you need everybody. Like when you brought up Jalen Johnson and not getting takeaways, let's say you're playing quarterback against the Bears during Jalen Johnson's career. Are you going to throw at Jalen Johnson or are you going to throw at Artie Burns?
No, and there's
one of these practice squad quarterbacks.
Yeah.
They finally have brought in other guys that would theoretically force quarterbacks to test Jalen Johnson.
I mean, I'd throw at Tyreek Stevenson until he can prove that, you know, until he proves himself.
Yeah, but you expect him to be good, don't you?
I mean, yeah, eventually.
That's what you do this week, but that won't hold up, I don't think. I mean, he is eventually going to be a really good quarterback.
Yeah, in week six of his rookie year, I would throw at Tyreek Stevenson. I look at the running back position as kind of the opposite. I think it is a fungible position. I think that your average player off the street can step in and do a fairly decent representation of what, you know, Khalil Herbert and Roschon Johnson.
The league agrees with you.
Yeah, that's how the league pays people. The Bears, depending on how you want to score keep this, are down to their fourth and fifth running backs. Or, you know, if you want to count Kari Blassingame as a running back, I guess they're fourth, fifth, and sixth running backs. But it looks like Dante Foreman's going to be the guy on Sunday. As we sit here now on a Thursday afternoon, Roschon Johnson still hasn't been cleared. Khalil Herbert's got an ankle injury. I don't expect him to play. And Travis Homer, I think, has a hamstring.
They still have quite a bit of time for Roschon Johnson to be cleared, and I would imagine, wouldn't you, that if he's cleared by Sunday, he would be first choice.
Yeah.
He's plan A.
Yeah, absolutely. But if he's not, you've got, Dante Foreman, who, after the Panthers traded Christian McCaffrey last year, was one of the best, four running backs in football in terms of yards? Like, and the Bears signed him, gave him $2 million over a year. They signed him to be part of a platoon, and then, you know, a month later they drafted somebody that I think it's apparent they like better in Roschon Johnson.
Roschon Johnson showed that he was better on the field. It was clear. That is good insurance. When you get down to you're saying third or fourth running back with him?
Yeah. Or fourth or fifth.
I'm thinking third running back.
I mean, Travis Homer plays every week, but he plays because he's a special team.
Right. I think just on running back depth, probably your third running back. When your third running back was almost 1,000 yards last year and still, we think, very viable, that's good. That's pretty good depth.
Does it concern you that he couldn't get on the field for 4 weeks?
No, because they obviously Khalil Herbert was number one.
And has been treated like number one since August.
And he will be when he's back. And Roschon Johnson was better than Foreman. And at that point, you need guys that also play special teams, and that's never going to be something that Foreman's going to do.
Right. And, you know, I talked to him, and he said, listen, if they didn't like me, they would have cut me. and you know, even though they're paying him $2 million, they could have easily walked away from him if they were done with him. They showed that with P.J. Walker, for example, that that didn't stop them.
I mean, you build your running back room now like a bullpen in baseball where, like, you know you're going to get to these guys at some point during the season.
We've gone this far without talking about Justin Fields, and for that, I'm proud of us, Jason, but let's get into it.
No, I'm disappointed in us. We just started there.
He is coming off the two best games of his career, bar none. In the last 2 weeks, he has averaged double the passing yards that he averaged in every other start in his career. Over 300 yards each time, 308 point something in each game. Is this a turning point? Is this a lull in the schedule? Or is this kind of somewhere in between?
Well, it could be a turning point, and it could be an aberration. It's really on him to decide that in the next few weeks. Right. I don't think we can make a ruling on that. It is probably the best two-game back-to-back that he's ever played.
Oh, I don't think there's any question.
And it was against, I believe, statistically, the worst and second-worst defenses in the league.
Right?
Or is it worse than like third fourth, worst or something?
Fourth or fifth worst, yeah.
Horrible defenses.
Right.
So, you know, that in itself, if I have to decide without seeing anything else, that's an aberration.
Right.
He's got to prove that it isn't. He's got to prove that that is more than that. That this is actually the start of a new trajectory for his career. And the, and even though he's continuing to play teams that aren't very good here coming up, the next two, the Chargers are after that. I think the Chargers are good. I'm never really sure.
Yeah.
But I think that stacking up four in a row, even against bad teams, that does tell you something.
Right. Or, you know, the Saints defense is really good, and that's the first week in November. You know, going into the Superdome and trying to win that game, that's a real challenge. I mean, that's not going into SoFi in a stadium that's 80% filled with Bears fans.
Yeah.
Like that will be the test.
I'm looking at it kind of just, you know, surface level, kind of logically here, Pat, as a just a brutal start to the season all around, including for him. I don't really think that Denver game was amazing. Like, he did a lot of good things in that game. He had some critical mistakes in that game.
He fumbled the ball away.
You have to look at both things. But I think that things started to turn then. There were some positives in that, not enough to win. And then things got much better against Washington. Now you have these next couple of kind of lightweight opponents. So you have this four-game stretch to kind of get yourself on solid footing. And then it gets tougher. You need to be ready by the time you're playing the Chargers and the Saints. This is your chance to get ready.
Right. And that, I mean, even then will only be about the halfway point of the season, which is the roller coaster that Justin Fields will have been on just before New Orleans is remarkable. I think that he was so bad in the offense was so bad in the first three games that I think everybody's expectations just fell to the floor too, which is in a way why I think it's been so fun for Bears fans to see him the last two games, because I think a lot of people just given up on him, and for him to do it with his arm and not necessarily with his legs that is growth. That's something we haven't seen before, right? I mean, it's not. I think you can sit there and say he's getting better without having to commit to, oh my God, he is either the answer or not the answer long term.
And I think everything that you see with your eyes in his game aesthetically and what the metrics, the advanced stats show you is he's been playing a little more freely.
Yeah.
Like he said he wanted to. And that doesn't mean that Justin Fields dictates what the offensive scheme is going to be.
No.
But I think, you know, revisiting those comments that he made going into the week three game in Kansas City, which is just a terrible time to make those. Like, say that when you're playing Denver, man. Don't say that when you're going on the road against the defending champs, because it's going to look a lot better when you can do it going into Denver or Washington. But I think there was some element, he said a lot of things in that press conference, but there was some element of, I'm too concerned with making mistakes. I'm too concerned with avoiding mistakes.
Right.
Don't do the wrong thing. So focused on what I shouldn't do rather than what I should do.
Yeah.
And I think what you have seen since then is someone who is statistically throwing more aggressively in terms of throwing into tight coverage more often and throwing further downfield. And it's just looked better, Pat. Looked more like this is what I could imagine Justin Fields' career being like. Now, like, the disclaimer on all of it is it was against the worst defenses in the league.
Sure.
But just the overall look and what the numbers are telling you about the way he's playing, it does seem his word was to play more freely and more naturally. I think he said both of those things. I would say he's playing more aggressively and a little less concerned with risk. You need to factor risk in when you're playing quarterback. That's part of it. Right. But you don't want to be overly engrossed in trying to avoid doing the wrong thing. You need to be thinking about doing the right thing. And DJ Moore, a great example.
Right.
Throw it to DJ Moore. Mm-hmm. You don't force it, but take your chances with DJ Moore. He's supposed to be that good.
To your point, the aggressiveness stat that NFL Next Gen Stats puts together, what that does is that measures how many times you throw the ball when a defender is within a yard of your guy. Justin Fields rankings in aggressiveness by week this season. Can I do it?
You're doing a percentage or you're doing a ranking among the other quarterbacks?
The ranking among all the quarterbacks.
So this is where he ranks among all the quarterbacks.
Week by week.
In terms of how many of his throws are into tight coverage.
Week by week. Week one, dead last.
I think it was under 3% that week of his passes.
Yeah. Week two, 7th to last. Week three, 6th best, then 10th best, then 7th best. So he has gone in the last 3 weeks to, you know, the top third of the league in terms of just letting it fly. Now, in that Chiefs game, the game was over at halftime, so I'm not going to give him any credit for letting it fly there. But, you know, the last 2 weeks he's been Josh Allen.
We're talking about a guy in the beginning of the season throwing aggressive, making those aggressive throws as that's defined. Like you said, less than 3% of the time week one. I think it was around 7% week two, and then boom, like 17-ish percent the last few weeks. That looks different. Now, Jameis Winston makes a lot of aggressive throws, and you don't want to be Jameis Winston.
Sure, right.
So there has to be some balance here. But you could see, knowing Justin Fields, having covered Justin Fields for the last 3 years, and having so many different voices in his ear, whether it's DeFilippo or Nagy or Lazor or Getsy or Janoco or Eberflus, you could see all of that becoming so much of a focus on doing everything the way they're saying and don't break this rule, don't break that rule, instead of just playing a little more.
Well, and we even talked about this in training camp, that there were times when you'd be watching practice and you'd drop back and you just sit there like under your breath, you go, throw it.
Yeah, make a play.
Throw the ball.
I was disappointed that Luke Getsy kind of was asked, I think I asked him about going back to those comments, did you and Justin kind of figure out a way forward from where helping him play more freely, empower him, embolden him to play a little more freely and not be so worried about mistakes? And Getsy just kind of was like, no, I've always treated him that way. There's nothing new.
Yeah.
But the result on the field looks new.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And maybe Getsy just doesn't want to dip his toes back in that water.
Yeah, they would love if that never got brought back up again. Yes. Fields, Getsy, Eberflus, they'd love it if we never brought that up again, yes.
I want to touch on DJ Moore real quick before we get to our picks. NFC Offensive Player of the Week. First time that had happened to a Bears receiver since 1999. Jason, what were you doing in 1999?
High school.
Okay.
High school.
Okay. Yeah. It was started my sophomore year of college. Fact is, the Bears haven't had many good receivers. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Not usually.
Is this a paradigm shifting thing? If Moore settles into a top 10 receiver, you know, he's not going to be Justin Jefferson, but if he is rich man's Keenan Allen, something like that, poor man's Devontae Adams.
I fully expect him to be. Why is anyone surprised by this? Why is this new to anyone? It's not new to you. You're not surprised by this.
No, I think the Bears completing a forward pass is new to everyone.
That is a little bit, revolutionary for them. But DJ Moore was a 1,000-yard per season wide receiver in Carolina when they had nobody at quarterback.
Right.
Justin Fields would dominate the quarterbacks that they had during his run in Carolina. Then he comes here, and Pat, you saw it from the first practice.
Right.
You saw it from day one. Oh, this guy is like nothing we've seen in the last several years with the Bears. This is their best player, in my opinion. And even if you didn't agree...
I don't think it's close.
I don't know if you agreed he was their best player, but
I certainly
would have put him in the conversation. Better at his job than anyone else. You saw that May, June, into August, September. Like, there was no doubt that he was that good. The question was whether the Bears would get going on him. DJ Moore is not new.
No.
DJ Moore is established. He's been doing this for a long time.
The Bears running a healthy offense to get him the ball is absolutely new, though.
Yeah, but this is something that they wanted to get for Justin Fields. They wanted to get him this weapon because it will make his job easier.
Right.
And you spent the first 3 weeks of the season being like, why is Justin Fields not using this? Why if Fields, Getsy, whoever's at play here, like, why are they not making use of this incredible weapon, the best weapon they have?
One thing, too, is the Commanders kept playing single high safety man defense. I think other defenses will probably want to double him a little more. The next step, I think, is finding other answers on the field that are not named DJ Moore. Darnell Mooney's been gone without a catch in 3 games this year, right? Cole Kmet has a hamstring injury. He's been pretty good this season, but your tight end probably shouldn't be your second guy. He should probably be your third guy. Chase Claypool's been amazing. Oh, nope, he's on another team. The Bears need weapons that aren't named DJ Moore in order to really have a healthy offense.
Justin Fields was preemptively honest about this a few weeks.
Yeah.
He said, once we start throwing to DJ, then you guys are going to be like, why aren't you throwing to Mooney? Why aren't you throwing to Chase? Why aren't you throwing to Cole Kmet? Why aren't you throwing to Byron Pringle and N'Keal Harry and all the way down the list? That's not what we're saying.
Right.
No matter what their defense they're playing, throw the ball to DJ Moore 10 times a game.
Sure.
Period. That's it. Everything else falls where it may. But that should open up opportunities for Kmet and Mooney to contribute something.
I would offer Robert Tonyan, too. I mean, there were 3 guys who caught passes against the Commanders. DJ Moore, Cole Kmet, and Robert Tonyan. You need to double that number at least, don't you?
You want to see Mooney.
Yeah.
Mooney's the guy you want to see. Mooney was a 1,000-yard receiver in 2021.
Yeah.
Mooney has had done nothing but climb since he got here, and then it just hasn't looked right. His last 17 games now, which is the last 2 seasons for him, I think he's at like 600 yards or something like that. That's just not the player you remember. It just hasn't quite seemed smooth with him in this offense, and they've got to figure that out because he definitely could be your number 2 to DJ Moore.
It also shows you how fleeting everything in the NFL is. At this time a year ago, at the end of 2020, I think, or 2021, you and I probably would have bet a lot of money that they would give him a second contract and that he'd be maybe not a top-tier receiver, but a strong middle-tier receiver.
Strong number 2 guy. And I think, Pat, at that time, we were making a list. This was during the changeover from Pace and Nagy to Poles and Eberflus. We were trying to make the list of who would the new administration want to keep?
Mm-hmm.
Who are your pieces that you absolutely have to keep? And it was a short list. It might have been 3 or 4 guys, but Mooney was on it.
Well, and then Ryan Poles shows up, and when we ask him about his building blocks, he names one person, and it's Darnell Mooney.
Yeah.
If the Bears could get him going, that would help them.
I'm not out on Darnell Mooney. I'm not writing Darnell Mooney off. We've seen enough from him. He has a body of work.
Sure.
That you give him the benefit of the doubt for a while here, that he'll figure it out, and you give him the benefit of the doubt, Pat, that it might not be him. It might not be entirely his problem here.
Sure.
This could be a Getsy issue. This could be a Fields issue. There is probably some component of it that's Mooney, and we remember last year he said he was having a little bit of trouble with the playbook. I think he had run the wrong route on some key plays or something like that. But this is a problem that everyone needs to be involved in figuring out because Darnell Mooney is hugely important to them.
He was also their best receiver in week 1 this year. Against the Packers. We're getting to picks here. Jason, we are split for the first time in a long time. Tell me who you've got and why, and I will tell you the score if you don't remember it.
I think I have Bears 29-26.
Over Very good. Yes.
And
why?
I think they'll score a lot. I think the Vikings are like ripe to be taken advantage of on that side. But I also think even without Justin Jefferson, the Bears aren't just going to shut them down.
No.
So I expect a high-scoring game. I think even though this is a great opportunity for the Bears, it's hard to picture them just stomping someone, even though I know we saw it last week. Even then, Pat, it was pretty tense there in the third quarter, early fourth quarter.
It was, and I've said this, but it was the closest 20-point game I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, if you didn't watch that game, you just won't understand why it felt that close. But it was the history. It was the context of what had happened 5 days before where they had blown a 28-7 lead late in the game. I think that there will be a good amount of points, which will be fun to watch, thank God. but I do think that, I think the Bears should win this game. It's hard to predict the Bears to win.
Right.
Because you sit there all the time and say, this is a game they should win. This is what they should do. They have enough in their favor that they should win this game, but they lose a lot of games that they should historically.
Mark Potash also has the Bears winning by 3. This time it's 23-26, and he's got that going into overtime, which talk about a fun game. Scoop Jackson and Rick Tellender have got the Bears as well. Rick Morrissey and I have the Vikings because Rick Morrissey likes whatever answer produces the most pain. And
has Rick Morrissey just filed his predictions for the entire season already?
I don't know. He
and they're all the opponent.
He's 4-1, and I'm 4-1.
Yeah, betting the opponent has worked.
Yes, that's the. You know? There's a reason that's the inverse of the Bears' record.
If you went the last like 5 years betting the opponent, you're probably ahead.
Yeah, I've got the Vikings 35-34. My argument is just that Kirk Cousins probably can't win you a Super Bowl, but Kirk Cousins on a random Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon is a pretty good player. And I don't think the Bears defense has shown that it can stop a quarterback who's pretty good yet. And, you know, it may come down to the end. And if it's raining, if it's gross on the field, that'll only make it more Bearsy there at the end.
I agree with you on Kirk Cousins. Like, he'll win you some regular season games. It is going to be harder when you don't have the guy that could get you 200 yards.
Yeah.
Jefferson. I mean, man, you have that. Like, every team in the league practically wishes they had that.
They may have that still, and we just don't know his name yet.
We'll just find out. The Bears will inform us of who it is with their poor defense.
Well, and then we'll pass it along to you when the game
Fred
ends.
Fred McGillicuddy. You're going to be surprised.
Was that the neighbor? No. Lucy was Lucy McGillicuddy.
I'm just making up names.
Fred was the neighbor. Anyway, we will be back next time from the press box at Soldier Field. Until then, you can follow Jason, Mark Potash, and myself on social media. Pick up a newspaper. Go to the Sun-Times website or app. He is Jason Leisure. I'm Pat Finley. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back again real soon.
Thanks for listening to the news live on WBEZ and NPR. The WBEZ stream sounds great in the kitchen on your smart speaker and anywhere on the WBEZ app. Listen every day.